my pleasure to welcome back Nina Galuppi to Many Rivers Books and Tea. She has spoken here before. She's a yoga instructor and Ayurvedic practitioner who focuses on preventive health care through maintaining connection to nature with daily and seasonal lifestyle practices. Her classes are based on the principles of Ayurveda, taking into consideration what is balancing for each of our unique constitutions and what is in greatest harmony with the solar and lunar cycles. So please join me in welcoming Kamina Galuppi. And you might actually come up and let's all sit in the front row.
Sure,
you know, just boldly go. Very good. So join me in welcoming Kamina.
Feeling again into those sensations within the body. and seeing if you can soften the body even more. Letting go with the exhale. Beginning to let the day go. Sense of well-being and feeling good, and generally speaking around Ayurveda, some people put it in the category of like a health science, which it is. It's also just a study of life. So Ayas means life in Sanskrit, Veda is knowledge, and it's really just teaching us how to live the best we can for the longest life possible, to fulfill whatever we're here to fulfill. And yoga and Ayurveda are sister sciences in that way, where yoga is, the goal of yoga is for self-realization, where the goal of Ayurveda is to be as healthy as possible so you can pursue a yogic path. So that's one level of taking it into your life. So if you're burdened with disease, you're not feeling well, you're probably not really wanting to meditate or take care of yourself, develop yourself spiritually. And if you're feeling good, you're probably more inclined to gravitate towards practices in that way. And even if it's not practices, just a better knowing of yourself and helping to remove just those layers of who we think we are and trying to understand what our true nature really is, which is kind of why we're all here. So Ayurveda, the word gets tossed around a lot. Obviously, we have the Dhyana Center in town, and someone I mentioned today that I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner, and they're like, yeah, I've heard of Ayurveda, but I don't know what to do with it. So that's actually a really common response. It's like, oh yeah, I hear it's great, but like, what do I do with it? So one of the main things you can do with it is follow the proper daily routine. So we'll get into that. Just another kind of like building block of Ayurveda is, like we're talking about daily routine and the choices we make each day. A lot of it is around what we take in through our five senses. So what we eat, what we smell, what's touching our skin, what we're listening to, what we're watching. So you can see how certain things we take in are harmonious with our being, and some things are maybe not and cause agitation. So foods we take in, smells that cause irritation. There's also different, like watching violent movies or something would be an example of taking in through our eyes that maybe are causing agitation, and then different sounds. So we can apply these kind of sense therapies as remedies in a way. So just depending on who we are, maybe certain aromas are going to be best for us. Maybe if we're needing something uplifting in the moment, we'll gravitate towards that. If we're needing something grounding, we can use aromas, or we can use foods and sounds and all these things to kind of create the best internal environment possible. So the five sense therapies are really what we do. So when people say, what do you do with Ayurveda? It's, we have body therapies, we have massage, we have aromatherapy, diet, we have a whole like purification process, different mantras and sound therapy is part of it, color therapy, so for sight, different clothes you can wear. Say if somebody is really heavy and tends to be more lethargic, you often want to recommend wearing lighter colors to brighten up, or maybe someone's a little too like in the clouds, like grounding earth tones can be really helpful. So as subtle as that may be, like accumulative, what we're taking into our five senses is usually just determines what our internal state is. So that's one thing. And then understanding the elements. So we work with earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and we each have a unique composition of how those elements are manifesting within us. And some people who have more fire, maybe they're drawn, they can tend to be angry, they'll have tendencies towards anger or frustration, and when that's balanced, and maybe as someone who's very mentally focused, someone who has a lot of earth element, when it's out of balance, that could show up as being like heavy and lethargic, like we talked about. Or when that's in balance, it could be someone that's very nurturing and loving. And then if somebody has more like air and ether in their composition, that's the light, kind of airy fairy archetype. And when out of balance, they can be very scattered all over the place. And then when in balance, they can be very creative and are usually more of the artists and tend to have more of a connection to the spirit world because of their light, etheric nature. So that's just kind of general terms, and then those also link up with the doshas. So you might have heard of the doshas when you heard of Ayurveda, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and those are made up of the certain elements. So you don't have to know these specifics. I'm just tossing these terms out to kind of get an overall sense. And that fiery type that I talked about, that's someone that mostly has the fire element and their pitta nature. Someone who has more water and earth, and their kapha. And then someone who has more air and ether is vata. So we all are a combination of them. Sometimes we have more, we are just predominant in one dosha. Oftentimes we're a combination of two. And it can change throughout our life. So we're all born with a certain constitution. Some people say it goes back to the point of conception, whatever our genetic blueprint is in a way. And then we have our current state, where we're at now. So that may be the same as what we were born with, or it could be very different. So someone may have an imbalance that's causing them to manifest a disease that's very different than what their constitution usually manifests in a way. So someone with that vata light etheric nature, because they can be kind of all over the place, they tend to have like things like anxiety or insomnia, but that doesn't mean that they wouldn't, you know, get depression or become overweight or things like that. And then by understanding what your constitution is, by understanding both of those, like what your kind of natural state is and what you're currently, then you know what to do to bring yourself back to your baseline constitution. And that's where those five sense therapies come in and where the daily routine comes in. And there's lots of, you know, different quizzes online you can take to find out your constitution. And when we work with a practitioner, there's a whole process involved, a whole diagnostic process of checking your pulse, similar to an acupuncture, looking at your tongue, understanding your long-term and short-term tendencies around patterns like sleep or digestion, energy levels, different illnesses that you've had. And then from there, it's understanding what's needed right away. So oftentimes people say, oh, well, I'm like a pitta nature. That's how I've been all my whole life. But if you happen to have insomnia now, that vata tendency, you have to treat that first. So does that make sense? Where it could be that sometimes our imbalances are this extra layer covering who we may be. And then there's also the physical features that can indicate what our constitution is. And so that will go, just to give some examples. Someone with a vata nature, they're usually taller and slimmer, lighter features, narrower features, smaller eyes. They tend to kind of like walk a little bit lighter. You can kind of plug into someone you know who has that vata nature. There's maybe more vata people in Sebastopol, I don't know, walking around like kind of head in the clouds. And then the pitta nature would be more of like that type A personality. They tend to have very sharp features, very...
Pitta
is the fire and a little water, so it has more like an oily composition, but mostly fire. And they tend to have like a moderate, more athletic build, and have like sharper, more like piercing eyes, like stronger jaw lines, just kind of sharper features. Sometimes they can look really intense when they're not meaning to look intense. And then again, they usually have very high mental focus. They have that fire to like illuminate and get things done. They're very efficient. Pitta people are like the list people and very organized. Where the vata, you can imagine, is pretty scattered most of the time. And then kapha is the earth and water, and they tend to have rounder features, rounder eyes, heavier set, more water retention usually. And people oftentimes like kind of associate kapha with like, oh, I don't want to be kapha, because sometimes people associate that with being overweight, but really, like, kapha is, like, the nourishing quality. Usually they are the ones that age the best because they don't get dried up like the vatas. They tend to have more just, like, fluids in their body, and they have that loving, nurturing nature. But when out of balance, they can get too heavy and kind of immobile, and, like, they take a long time to, like, get going. But when once they do, they're very, like, dedicated and motivated and devotional in that way. So that's a very brief overview of the archetypes. And you could kind of think, like, well, maybe I'm a little bit of this, maybe a little bit of that. And of course, we flux and change throughout the year. So in the summertime, when it's hot, someone with a pitta nature who already has a lot of fire are probably going to have a tendency towards aggravation and road rage and anger, and they're that stereotypical person that's just like beet red face and just ready to explode. Or someone with a vata nature who tends to be a little bit more frail and run, and on the colder side, come fall and winter, they tend to get sick easier and have a harder time with sleep, and their mind can just be kind of all over the place because air is also the wind element. So it's imagining like a wind just like moving through the mind, and they can have excess air in their system, like gas or bloating, and like I said, the anxiety or overwhelm. And that vata nature, especially in the mind, is common for most people in our culture and our time because everything is very vata vitiating. Driving in a car, using the internet, that's all connecting us through the ethers, so it's not very grounded. And then just change in general. So anyone going through change, the vata energy is going to start to stir. So that's how Ayurveda can help us when we're going about a change to do those grounding practices to bring things into our routine that are going to nourish us and connect us more to the earth. Whereas someone with kapha, if they already are very connected to the earth, they need things that are going to get them going. They need uplifting aromas, lighter foods. End of winter, springtime, the kaphas are usually like very sluggish. And most of us are pretty sluggish after the winter, after like eating more and moving less. And now we're moving into a time of year where like things are popping up, things are blooming, we're actually almost like on the edge of summer. The green hills are starting to turn golden, so there was all that moisture and blooming, and now we're starting to move into that hot, drier weather. So because of that, we'll need to adjust our routine and the foods we're eating, and as you can imagine, it will be different for each person. So someone who's very vata will still need to have grounding foods whenever possible. They're the kind of people that you want them to sit down to eat. Usually vata people like to be eating and running and going, and so something they can do is just sit down to eat slow, and provide those kind of like anchors in the day that can that they can just relax into. And then the pitta people, because they're starting to get hot and like amped up, doing relaxation is best for them. So like yoga nidra or like time in a hammock, just laying down on the ground, not doing or not checking things off their list. And things like watching TV or being on the phone doesn't really count for relaxation in this model because our mind is still very stimulated and we're not getting that full deep relaxation. And then the kapha people, this is the time of year to like do the most exercise, to really lighten up the foods, and we'll get into that more specifically, to break a sweat. This is good for most of us as we're like still kind of clearing away any stagnation from the winter. Hopefully most of it has moved through, but paying attention to like how we can keep moving the lymphatic system and preparing ourselves for summer, not get too hot. So does that all make sense so far? Just these little kind of pieces of Ayurveda, and you can see like each of these, like it's this whole, there's this depth, and like on each category. We could spend a whole like time talking about the aromatherapy in Ayurveda and how you can apply that to yourself and your dosha, the time of day. I'm going to focus more on the food because that's what I love. I'm Italian, I think. No. But I just think that that's an important piece that, you know, I think around here there's a lot of, there's the mindset around eating locally, and usually that's eating seasonally, and so we're kind of working with nature in that way. But some of us, usually the pizza people, will eat the same thing all year round, and it's helpful to know how to make those shifts. And it may seem subtle, but like changing out certain oils, like moving into like a lighter oil now, doing changing your spices slightly, using more like bitter herbs and greens, and less of the heavier like root vegetables and heavier grains, just basically lightening things up as everything is lightening up. The springtime in Ayurveda is the time to cleanse the liver because of that stagnation that can occur in the winter time. So that's why the bitter herbs come in, that they work directly with the liver. Microgreens and sprouts, so mustard greens, even like the kind of warmer, spicier foods, arugula, chard. This is the time to really be bringing those in. And then spices wise, it's a good time to bring in more of the warming spices. So like the turmeric is great, black pepper, other Ayurvedic spices that are commonly used are like cumin, coriander, fennel. Those are kind of best for all doshas year round, but they help with digestion. So making sure to incorporate proper spices. Even bringing things like a little bit of cayenne in at this time of year. We know that spring is a good time for cleansing, clearing out the home, clearing out the space, and just seeing how we can really do that. So it's one thing to think about, like, yeah, that's a good thing to do at this time of year, but then also really seeing how that can maybe take place for you on the smallest level. Maybe it's one round of just cleaning out the closet or the cabinet. Could be one day of just eating really light if you don't have time for a full cleanse. So we're lightening the load, and oftentimes we feel more energy in this time of year now that the days are longer and that we want to move more. So it's also encouraged to spend more time outside and to just kind of take in that extra prana. So all these flowers that are blooming, these sprouts that are coming up, it's like this surge of energy moving forward. So this is not the time of year to stay inside and I would say be curled up with a book, but I mean, maybe out, be outside curled up with a book to take in the prana of the environment. And so even though a lot of us intuitively follow the rhythms of nature, Ayurveda is just like that fine tuning. So, are there any questions about that so far, about different ways to kind of utilize the spring energy?
No, daylight and sunshine.
Yeah, so that's a big one. So we can kind of move into part of the daily routine, and the first thing is waking up by sunrise. To help optimize that energy. So if you're waking up with the sun, you're kind of riding that wave with the sun. Your energy is increasing as the sun is increasing. So that's first recommended, to wake up with the sun. People with Kapha nature, it's recommended to wake up even earlier than the sunrise because you need that little extra time to get going. And then by the time the sun is coming up, you're really like ready to go. And then eating with the sun, so having the largest meal at midday, when our digestive fire is the strongest. So oftentimes our digestive fire in Ayurveda is called Agni, so our Agni is usually at the peak when the sun is at the peak. So having the largest meal midday, which is not often done in our culture, usually it's the largest meal is at dinner, but you can just try working with that adjustment of having the largest meal at midday, so you have have more time to digest. And then having your last meal of the day before sundown. So when the sun sets, our Agni like really diminishes quickly. And then that ensures that we're having enough time to digest before sleep. So the hours of the day, as far as how much sleep you're getting to, it becomes a little bit less as the days get longer. So in the winter time, it's recommended to sleep more, spend more time inside, eat the heavier foods. In Ayurveda, it's even recommended to eat meats and drink red wine in the winter time. It depends on who it's for, but those are the kind of heavier, nourishing things. Whereas now, those aren't so recommended. So cutting out like those heavier, refined sugars and grains and fried food and all those things, where we can lighten up and be more mobile and active. So that's one way. And as far as using the sun's energy, also doing sun salutations in the morning, so like a yogic practice with the sun, can also help to ensure the energy is going to carry us through the day. There's even practices of sunbathing, like not too much if you're a Pitta nature, but really like taking in the energy of the sun. And then of course the energy of the moon as well. So for Pitta nature, doing moon bathing in the summertime is the best way to take in the solar energy without getting too hot, because obviously the sun is reflecting off the moon, which making it bright. So those are a few things. Any other questions as we're kind of moving through?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
A lot of people in
summer
come up with springtime allergies.
Yeah.
So as you move into
strong
season, that's something to deal with. So
yeah.
How does Ayurveda see that?
Yeah, no, like a point. So Ayurveda sees that as the natural flow of, say, the snow melting within our body and the rivers being full of mucus. So the snow melts as the sun warms up, so everything that liquefies inside, and so more mucus starts to flow. And it's best to just encourage that movement to let it out. So doing a neti pot daily is really great. And then also sweating, moving the lymphatic system, doing a mild cleanse, that usually helps with allergies. And yeah, so this is the time of allergies, which is also why doing the neti pot, maybe if you don't usually have congestion, it can be good for this time of year. And then of course the diet, as you notice, the diet has an effect on allergies, but there's again that cleaner diet helps to our immune system handle whatever is coming in. And then something else that if you're doing the neti pot that can be great is putting a little bit of oil in the nose afterwards to help lubricate the nasal passage, and it can provide that little layer between the pollen and you. So I can talk to you about that after too. It's called nausea oil, and you just put a little drop on your finger and put it in the nose, or you can even tilt your head back and like really get it in there. So that's one trick. So we can go more specifically into this daily routine, and what I wrote out for you guys is just one example of how Ayurveda could look in your day. So we talked about waking up with the sun. One of the first things that Dr. Ladd recommends, and I see that you guys have a few books there, is to just slowly open your eyes when you're in bed and have that first moment of wakefulness just be like a moment to be with yourself and just listen to the day, instead of just hopping up like, oh, okay, I gotta go. So that first moment that you wake, or even just keeping the eyes closed, like, okay, I'm awake now, and like breathing and then just easing in. So that's one of those transition points. And then first thing, also scraping the tongue helps to clear away any toxins that have accumulated throughout the night, that were being cleared away. So we usually have this little film on our tongue, and by scraping it, helps to clear that away and then stimulate the digestive organs. So in reflexology, similar to what you've seen, like the bottom of the foot matching the organs. In Ayurveda, we look at the tongue in that way. So when you're scraping the tongue, it can help to stimulate the bowel movement. So that's also best to have in the morning if possible. And then drinking some lemon water, warm lemon water, or apple cider vinegar and warm water to help alkalinize the body. So that's another great thing to do first thing, especially in the spring. So in the winter, you may want to do a more like nourishing tonic, but for now, this time of year, it's definitely best to have that warm lemon water. I know there's a lot of lemons around now too. And then oil pulling. Practice of swishing oil in the mouth for gum health, and that also helps just draw toxins out. And then brushing the teeth, and then bathing. So, have you guys heard of Abhyanga, the Ayurvedic oil massage or dry brushing? So this is an amazing. So this is one of the things in the Bahamas that we're like, I just want to like shout this at them from the rooftops. Like, this is one of the best practices. So, and I know they have lots of great oils at Rosemary's Garden and the Beyond Center for this, but first thing in the spring, because we're so concerned with the lymphatic health, again, it's the rivers of the body, so making sure there's good flow, is you can do some dry brushing. So you can take just one of those brushes or like the little gloves and just scrub and kind of just create a little redness on the skin, so just like get the lymph moving. And then you can choose to take a shower or first apply the oil and take a shower, but basically Abhyanga is a an oil massage that you do for yourself of applying the whole body with oil, and you create friction around the joints, and then you make long strokes towards the heart to help drain the lymph. And this is something that we do every day in Ayurveda. We're all about the oil in Ayurveda. So again, there's like a few reasons for this. So one of them is to really move the lymph, create that friction around the joints just for mobility in the joints. And then the other is to nourish the skin with that oil, whatever oil is right for you. And I have that written down. I can talk more specifically about oils. So just nourishing the skin with the oil. And then lastly, it's providing that protective layer between you and the outer world before stepping outside of your house. So especially if you live in a city or even just here, it's like we're exposed to a lot of sensory stimulation and just other people's energy, and just that little layer of oil can be nice, just kind of boundary between you and whatever you're taking in. And then the qualities of oil are heavy and grounding, so it's good for the mind as well. It's very calming and just like a self-love practice, like that oil. Snehana is the word for oil in Sanskrit, and that means love. So it's basically applying love to your body. And even if it's a very light layer, and if you do it before you get in the shower, then that oil can help to absorb. If you do it after, then it can be like a more of a moisturizer. And we can get more specific about that. But applying oil to your skin daily is a great practice. So now that's a little bit warmer, you can use a light oil like coconut, maybe some of you already do. Almond oil, sunflower oil is great for this time of year. Once you get into the warmer months, sesame oil is the best. And it feels amazing. So even just doing that massage for yourself, even though it seems like, well, why would I want to do that? I'd rather just go get a massage. But there's a really nice effect, and it's that thing of starting circulating around the joints, make friction around the joints, and then it's long strokes towards the heart. Just circulating around the joints, long strokes towards the heart, and you just feel energized by it. So you can even try it now if you're to create friction around the joints if you want to. And then like sweeping strokes, you're also stimulating a lot of marma points and acupuncture points. Long strokes. Try to take some circulation around the knees. You can see how it just brings energy to the body. You can circle around the legs. So even just doing this, you can see it just kind of brings energy to the body. So this is why it's done first thing in the morning. And you can imagine with the oil, it's also providing that nourishing quality. So I really recommend trying that. If you're going to do one thing, I'll be on this. And then once the oil is sitting, seeping into the body, say if you do it after the shower, you can do your other things, like brush your teeth or just get ready. And then if you need to put clothes on right away, you can wipe it off with an old towel so they don't stain your clothes. And then, part of this Ayurvedic routine, the next step is your daily sadhana, so your spiritual practices, whatever that looks like for you. In Ayurveda, some form of meditation, yoga, asana, postures, chanting, and breath work, pranayama, is recommended. And that's kind of also why it can be nice to work with a practitioner or just read more about it so you know what practices are best for you. Some pranayama or breath work is very stimulating and can create more heat, and then other forms of breath work are more cooling and calming. What would be best for who. In the springtime, because we're trying to move any stagnation, doing a more heating pranayama like the Kapalabhati, which is the pumping of the belly, can be a really nice way to also start the day. So if you're oiling the body, doing some Kapalabhati, doing some sun salutations, you're probably going to feel like really ready to go and really energized. I just want to say, like, the counterbalance of that would be, say, come fall, oiling the body with a heavier oil, doing some, like, hip opening, maybe some yoga postures on the ground, and then doing, say, an alternate nostril breathing to help calm the mind, would be an example of something that you would kind of be the opposite of what you would do now. And you can definitely do that now if you feel like in the morning time you're needing to really center yourself. And you don't want to just get all amped up too soon. You really want to think about specifically what practices you're choosing. So you can get really specific around your yoga asana routine, the type of meditation, whatever, you know, kind of meditation works for you. I personally say that if you're starting with a morning sadhana, just to pick like 10 to 20 minutes and just see what happens. Maybe it's a matter of rolling out your yoga mat, sitting on the meditation cushion, and just tapping into your practice. It's really mostly about creating that connection for yourself. And some of the people that I worked with in the Bahamas, their first time being exposed to yoga, and really, if you're even the practice of just sitting, lighting a candle in the morning, taking 3 deep breaths to start the day, that's amazing. It's like maybe even the most advanced practitioners, like, that's still very effective. So it's around just commencing the day by connecting to the breath, trying to avoid rush mode whenever possible. And then that daily sauna could be, you know, extremely elaborate as well. So, you know, an hour or two or whatever is appropriate for you, but I think consistency is kind of the number one. So it's every day you can commit to lighting a candle, saying a prayer or just giving thanks or whatever it is. Oftentimes moving the body is helpful too. So just some gentle movement, some stretching, you know, just going outside, circling the arms, something that's for you at that time. So that's the first half of the day. There's so much about the morning routine. You'll see in books it's even very specific, like Kapha people wake up at 4:30, then do your, like, put cold water on your face, like put oil in your ears. Like, it was very, you get it very specific, but generally speaking, like, these are all really good things to incorporate, and finding your own way with it, like, makes it possible. So then it's time to eat, we'll get more into the specifics around the food, but usually having a nourishing breakfast is best, even at this time of day, this time of year when we're lightening up. Ayurveda is not really big into smoothies or cold drinks in the morning, so having like a light grain cereal or some stewed fruit could be a good example. and then probably time for work or some activity, and then time for midday, the largest meal, between 10 and 2, is like that peak hours of the sun, and the pitta hours, we call them, and then again, just bringing in mindfulness to the meal time, is another way to bring Ayurveda into your life. It's also like going upstream from our culture, and like all this just grab and go and whatever it is that we we all get caught up in, so doing the best we can the majority of the time to sit and breathe and eat and pay attention to when we feel satisfied, and because oftentimes if we're eating fast we're eating more or maybe not making the right choices. And something that I've been working with lately is reminding myself, like, I'm building my body with this food. Like, this food is becoming me. Like, do I want this? Do I want to become a Snickers bar or whatever? So it's really, is the food we eat really does become the tissues of our bodies. So keeping them as clean and pure as possible, and wholesome and home-cooked as possible. So that's a whole... That can be a project within itself. So there's a lot of tricks to that. But I think that we each know like what kind of one step up would be for us. Like, okay, if only I could just do that one thing, or I'm going to make that little extra effort this week, or whatever it may be. That can sometimes be a domino effect in a good direction. There's an Ayurvedic saying, when you're out of balance, we crave things that keep us out of balance. In balance, we crave things that keep us in balance. So that's a little bit of like a, huh, how does that work? And I found that to be true, and I think a lot of people found that to be true. So it's a great time of year to get inspired in a new health kick, but it's much more than that, of course. So Ayurveda is not about any fad diet or anything you try on. Slow integration, bringing it into our lives, and making those adjustments as nature makes those adjustments. So I say inspired and health kick is because that's the energy of this time of year. There's that surge, and we can really like catch on to that and feel most alive. And so we have we're back at our midday, had our big meal. We have to go back to work or activities, whatever it is. And then making time for exercise. This is one example. Maybe your exercise is in the morning, but for someone who's later in the day, it would be a good time to exercise, say, early evening. And outdoor activities are best. This is the time of year for more vigorous exercise, really sweating, getting the heart pumping. Whereas in the summertime, it's actually not recommended to be as active because we can wear ourselves out and it's too hot. So this is the time of year to like really do that outdoor, you know, bicycling or whatever it is that's gonna work. It's like really work the hardest, or even in yoga, doing the harder poses, like more heating, back bends or arm balances. And then after exercise or at some point in the day, scheduling in time for rest and relaxation. So like I talked about the shavasana, the just laying on the ground. So I like to recommend to like the New Yorkers and people that I saw in the Bahamas, like, okay, when you get home from the day, just drop everything down and just lay down. Just take 10 minutes to let the day go. Because oftentimes if we don't have that transition, we just carry whatever that weight, that stress, we just carry it into the day. Start accumulating and accumulating. So to just let it all go, create that little space of transition. It can be 5 minutes, or maybe there's something else you like to do to relax. So scheduling that into the day. So I think that's one thing that I feel like also in our culture, it's like part of these all these things that will be great for our health. Maybe proper food and exercise and proper sleep. But I think to add on to that, proper relaxation and time outdoors, time in nature, and then time in community connected to others, I think are also really key components. So say we receive our relaxation in this perfect drive anything. And then it would be time to eat again. And having a lighter meal in the evening, so like something like soup or quinoa, lighter seed or grain, some lighter vegetables cooked versus raw, it's easier to digest. Having it before sundown, and then would be the time to maybe spend time with community or loved ones or just relaxing by yourself, and letting like the mental activities begin to kind of fade away. And going back to that peak time of when the Agni is the strongest during the Pitta hours, that's usually also when our mind is the sharpest. And so that's a good time of day to schedule those like tedious tasks and the emails and the like, just where we feel like, okay, we gotta go get this done. Trying to put that into the earlier part, midday, earlier part of the day. So at night we don't have to rev up our mind again. And then moving into the evening, that gradual descent into sleep, doing whatever you need to do to get ready for bed, and then making sure to turn off electronics like an hour before sleep usually helps, and then closing the day with, again, lighting that candle perhaps, or just giving thanks, and easing off into sleep. So, around sleep, in Ayurveda, it's recommended to go to bed by 10 o'clock or before 10. It's not always possible, so I'm just sharing what I've found to work and what the Ayurveda texts say. The Pitta hours that I mentioned were from 10 to 2 midday, also apply at night, so 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and that's when the liver is doing its detoxifying. So the liver is like our janitor, and so between 10 and 2, it's like cleaning up, and if we're eating or not sleeping, it's going to disturb that cycle, and then that can lead to like more congestion in the morning, and then we just accumulate toxins, and then it kind of builds over time in a way that's not always useful. So going to bed as early as possible and waking up with the sun is usually optimum. And I know for some people it might be like, oh yeah, I already do that, that's what I do, and others just like, whoa, I am a night owl, that is not my schedule at all, I like watching movies late or whatever. And I would say that it depends. That's another like very commonly used phrase in Ayurveda, like, well, it depends. So if someone that's having an imbalance and having insomnia, like, we want to make sure that routine is in place. Someone whose digestive fire is strong and immunity is strong, maybe every now and again that would be okay. So part of this science of life is the science of like self-learning, and so it's understanding, kind of using ourselves as these walking laboratories to experiment. What do we do? What can we do to feel our best? And I know this works, I know this doesn't work. And once we know that, then it's a matter of like aligning with it and knowing when our mind is choosing otherwise, or our desires are choosing otherwise. And then there's just that gradual like bringing ourselves back. So, and everyone has their own tendencies and things that throw us off. So for some people that live, say, in an ashram, this Ayurvedic routine is pretty much just embedded in the day. And that's a lot of the Ayurvedic texts were written in that, with that setting in consideration. So we have to find a way to transfer that into our modern life. And I think there's definitely ways. And even if we're commuting or we're in traffic a lot and things that are like just don't feel the best for our body, we can still work with proper aromas, getting proper food, exercise, sleep, relaxation, time with nature, community. And it can be very small. So maybe as you're sitting here thinking, oh, well, one of those is like a little bit, could use a little more attention, or like one of them is like, I'm definitely always dialed into that. This would be a good time to play around with how you can increase maybe one of those areas that are struggling. usually that kind of shifts the whole picture. So even if we were to do one, like just changing the diet, cooking the majority of your meals at home for a week, that usually shifts the whole cycle of energy level, sleep, maybe not craving coffee and sugar, and then wanting to take that time. You're waking up feeling good, so you want to take that time to do your practices, and it has that ripple effect. So the one thing with Ayurveda that I think can sometimes turn people away, they're like, how can I do that? That sounds too hard, and maybe these things I mentioned don't sound too hard, but when we look at that one thing that may be causing us the most trouble, usually when we address it, other things can fall into place, so it's worth looking at, as we know. So does anything come to mind that you want to ask this about? We can go more specifically. I know that, again, it's a very kind of zoomed through overview.
Curious, yeah. About you talked about the seasons, and I grew up in the Midwest. The seasons are much more in your face.
Yeah.
Here, seasons are not so in your face.
Yeah.
Or even the way we experience, like, to me, it's just felt lately, even though it's been pretty cool for May.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, this last week, it feels like more like summer's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's, and then there's the calendar seasons, and there's different ways to experience, to do that, to divide that up. Some people say summer begins, with solstice.
Yeah.
Other people, like when I was in New Zealand a few months ago, it's like, autumn begins. It was, March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning of autumn, which here it would have been 22 or 23 days later.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm just curious about this aspect.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that you're probably would say that it depends on where you are.
Uh-huh.
Partly, but anything else you have to say about that?
Yeah, that's true. It really does depend on what environment we're in, and even in India, where a lot of these texts originated. There's six seasons. There's the monsoon time, and there's certain foods to eat during that time and not. So it's really about observing the environment around you and working with what's happening there. So for a Midwest winter, your routine would be different than Midwest than a winter here. And as far as when summer starts, yes, in Ayurveda, there's a lot of rituals around the solstices and equinoxes, but it's more when that weather starts to change. So I would say we're gradually moving into summer now, end of May, and so things are about to get drier and hotter, so that's when we start bringing in the cooling, more cooling herbs and spices. If you're right, it depends on where you are, so there's not some set date, because we can't help but feel hotter now.
Well, I noticed that, in the wintertime, I can feel like I really want to have heat on when it's only 61 degrees in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But in the summertime, I get up in the morning and it's 61 degrees and I'm like, it's so wonderfully cool.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a very different experience of the same.
Feel differently. So maybe it is adjusting our schedule, our work schedule, or our just time of waking and sleeping. It seems kind of obvious with the food, you know, we're going to want like the watermelon in the summer and not in the winter. But really seeing how we can leave the season behind as we go into the next. So that's also about the transition where, I don't know, probably a lot of restaurants here still serve like a yam soup or whatnot, where it's like, oh, it's not really appropriate right now. So we can make the best choices we can. Or like in the fall, we want like that root bean grounding food. Yeah, there's a lot of, I'm waiting for the Ayurvedic cafe to open in town. I don't know. Does anyone want to start that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's making the best choices we can, and kind of that majority of the time that we're doing what we know is best for us and what feels good.
Yeah. So a lot of people, I have a couple of friends who have schedules that are just automatically Western.
Yeah.
Crazy. They're fully American schedules.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's difficult to be healthy and do some of these practices in that way. Is there anything about any of these that can specifically help someone whose schedule is forced into a certain kind of unhealthy pattern, such as working late at night and that kind of stuff?
And what time, how late? Like, are they doing like the night shift or something? Yeah, that's going to mess someone. So... yeah, there's certain circumstances that is just what needs to happen, but I can say that my mentor, who's been doing Ayurveda for over like 40 years plus, she says that is like, she can't do anything with anyone until they change that schedule, because that is just causing all sorts of imbalances. And so, it's the kind of thing where you want to question, is that the line of work that you want to be in? But again, it's just, you have to be really on your routine when you have those other factors. So, and if that person is drinking coffee late or other things that usually we tend to do and we're feeling a little bit off, then that's going to just push us over the edge most likely. So I would recommend yoga nidra for someone like that, where they can still, to help them stay in that relaxed space, even if they're having to rev up their mind later at night. Yeah. So it's all very specific. It's like this kind of individualized care that I made. So understanding someone's very unique constitution in life. So we do very intensive intakes, like sometimes 2 hours plus, to just get to know really what's going on with someone, all the layers of their life. Any other questions?
Question about the 4 different. And the diet.
Yeah, the Vata, Pitta, Kapha.
Right. Okay. Right. So if I eat a lot of food from my garden, and I'm vegetarian, so mostly what I'm eating is just supplementing with a few other things, and I eat whatever is seasonal. But should I be, from the Ayurveda point of view, should I be planting specific things for my temperament?
Planting certain things, sure, and then also how you prepare them. So, like I was saying, cooked foods are better for Vata, whereas the raw food can be too light and dry. So if you're going to have, say, even like salad greens, have those at lunchtime when you have more time, your digestive fire is stronger, whereas they can sometimes too many raw vegetables can cause gas or bloating. And then nightshades are also not as recommended for pittas because they can create some inflammation. So those are a few things. And then also like this time of year, again, like having those bitter herbs and roots, dandelion greens, mustard greens, all those things. And then the squashes and the root vegetables as we go later. So it's pretty intuitive in that way. And then we work a lot with legumes, like an Ayurvedic cooking. I don't know if you guys heard of khichdi, an Indian dish that's like mung beans and rice and spices and ghee. Ghee is also fabulous. And And I have a KitchenAid recipe for you guys, and that can be a great staple food. Like if you don't know what to cook or you're feeling a little bit off, and then you can just add in whatever vegetables you have or have it on the side. Cooking with ghee is, I don't know if you've had to cook with ghee, but a great trick is to keep the spices in the ghee before you add it to your rice or dish to make like an infused oil with the spices, so it helps to extract the medicinal properties of the culinary spices. And then you have this like infused ghee, and the ghee helps to bring those medicinal benefits deep into the tissues internally. So ghee is a wonderful oil. And then, you know, soaking the beans and the rice helps to make them more digestible. And then also the spiced asafoetida, they have that at a community market. That's really great for legumes. So kitchery is wonderful. And then I also have a massaged kale salad on here that I really love. I don't know if you guys have done them, like, massage the kale with olive oil and spices. And yeah, so you don't cook it, you just massage it and it breaks it down. And you can add carrots and lime juice and toasted sesame oil. So that kale is also bitter and astringent, so it's good for this time of year. And beans are, of course, astringent, so that's why it helps to purify the body. And then there's the arugula pesto, which is also really great. And there's garlic in this recipe. Sometimes in Ayurvedic cooking, we don't use garlic and onions because they're tamasic in nature, heavier, and they can affect our meditation. So that's your choice. And then also sesame laddu. So they're like little sesame balls of ghee and honey and Ayurvedic spices. And that's a really nice treat. So working with the sweet taste instead of sugar can be a good way to move off of sugar, is to just work with like honey and maple syrup and dates and stewed fruits and things like that. So these sesame laddu balls are really great if you're wanting something sweet but also nourishing. Yeah, I don't know how many of you are cooks, but it can be fun to play around with. And then I have just an overview of Ayurveda to touch on the points that we mentioned, how to work with the elements, and understand your constitution, and then that kind of sample daily routine. And again, I would pick one or two things that maybe you haven't tried that you want to try, or maybe things that maybe you have the neti pot at home, or you just need that reminder to do it, and just experiment for this next week on how you could bring a couple things into your morning routine. Because I'm sure we've all experienced how we start the day can really affect how the rest of the day goes. Extra time can be enjoyable too. It doesn't have to feel like a chore. Or for the pitta people, it may be like, hey, scrape time, check, okay, check. And just to like ease into it and have things readily available in your bathroom, and so it can feel like a natural step to put the oil on. And and then there's lots of different oil blends. So even though I mentioned like using coconut oil or sunflower, almond, sesame, you can add in essential oils oil blends. So I'm happy to answer any other questions. I just wanted to kind of give that overview, and thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me
have many
references.
Yeah, thank you.
So Odin is going over, I see right now, to get the donation bowl, which we have over there, and we ask people to contribute, and we share that with our speakers, and also have to maintain the space here for further such talks. And thank you so much
for
coming.
Yeah.
And we'll pass these out to people.
Yeah, definitely. And I wanted to let you know, too, that I see you're going to use your class at the Dhyana Center. This Sunday night is the last one. It's at 6:30. It's a deep relaxation class. You're laying on your back, so you can fit in that relaxation time. And anyone who's here tonight, join a consultation, you can get like a 10% discount if you want to do a full
enter the Dhyana Center?
Sometimes, yeah. I teach classes there. I usually, mom has a little health wellness center in Santa Rosa.
That's right, of course.
Good
to keep it in the family.
Yeah. Emails there, so if you have other questions that come up, and even if you don't want a full consultation and you just are curious about how to design your daily routine, you can email me. And I think also the word routine also sometimes like steers people away, like, oh, I hate routine, oh no, not routine. And so it's about finding the right routine that has flow to it, and that you can turn that off if you're
no, I'm waiting to turn this off.
Oh, okay, perfect. So that's
I was going to turn it off earlier, but you're continuing to talk.
Oh, yeah. Just a last note that the word routine doesn't have to be scary, and that this Ayurvedic routine is, it's about finding what flows with your life, and that it can be very uplifting, and it's not this, like, doomy thing of, like, oh, not this again, because we're changing each season, so that also provides that variety. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shanti.